Welcome back to another episode of In the Money. I'm Roberta King, a Vice President Branch Leader with Fidelity Investments. Today we have Tony Zhang, Chief Strategist of Options Play, with us. Tony is a frequent CNBC guest also. Tony, welcome. It's good to be back with you.
Thank you so much, Roberta. It's great to be back. A lot has transpired in the markets over the last week, so I'm looking forward to diving into that.
I agree. So today is Thursday, July 17th, 2025. And of course, as you've mentioned, we've all continued to have a watchful eye on the markets and really how they're responding to key economic data as it's coming out. So, Tony, we're curious to know what you're seeing, know what you're paying attention to. So let's get this day started and our conversation going with your macroeconomic view. What are you observing?
Thank you so much, Roberta. Like I said, a lot has transpired in the last week, and actually a lot has transpired in just the last 24 hours. You have the S&P 500 essentially at all-time highs. Price action was a little choppy here over the last couple of days, but right now we're looking quite strong here. We saw retail sales surprise to the upside. That was a pretty big shift that we saw here in June, and that aligns with some of the early reports that we saw out of the earnings season with Delta and JP Morgan and some of the major banks really showing us that perhaps the consumer has turned a bit of a corner here, and the second half of 2025 looking a little bit more optimistic than it did over the last 90 days. We had news around the blanket tariffs that are going to be put up around the world, at somewhere in the 10 to 15% range, which is avoiding some of the larger concerns that people had with regards to, what the tariffs might look like past the August 1st deadline. Earnings season so far has largely been fairly positive in terms of what we've seen so far, and the market is kind of shaking off, the back and forth with regards to whether or not President Trump was going to fire Chairman Powell. So it seems like we've gotten past that, and right now the only thing that we have to look to is that August 1st tariff deadline, and there are still a couple of major trading partners that have not completed their negotiations, largely the EU and India, even though those are not necessarily the biggest ones to be concerned about, but there are potential retaliatory tariffs with those two countries, with those two regions, if we don't see a deal being done by August 1st. So there are some risks that we still see here over the next couple of weeks, but largely a lot of the economic data that's coming out, the information that we're seeing here from the broader markets have been a pretty positive. Now, if you look at the Treasury market, that's really where things are a little bit different. You have 10-year yields back near 4.5%. The 30-year is actually back above 5%, and this is largely off of the higher inflation print that we saw here earlier this week. Now, that inflation is likely tariff related, and because that inflation print largely came in where it was expected, the markets largely was taking that initially as a non-event, or at least potentially even a positive event. But this is really where I think the Treasury market still remains a little bit uneasy about U.S. fiscal sustainability, and this is actually where I think some of the risks lie at the moment. You have the VIX now below 17%. If you look at the VIX futures curve, it really shows that the markets are being a little bit complacent here right now, given kind of some of the looming risks with tariffs, in the next couple of weeks, especially with the EU and India. And this is really where I think the market is potentially underpricing some tail risk with a trade deadline coming up. You have rising risks, and just even though economic momentum that has been slowing down has seemingly reversed a little bit here, that's only been 1 month's worth of data, so it's not quite enough necessarily to say that the slowdown that we've seen in economic activity over the last 6 months is starting to reverse higher here. So I do think that for considering the fact that the equity markets have rallied 30+% here in just the last 2.5 months, which is one of the fastest recoveries we've seen in the S&P 500 in history. Just by all measures, from a technical perspective, this market is quite overstretched. Not to mention, there are some signs of exhaustion here as we kind of reach new all-time highs here today. That does lead us to believe that there is a higher probability of at least a bit of a consolidation and sideways digestion of all what has happened up until now, if not potentially a little bit of a short-term pullback to the breakout level, which is around 6,100 on the S&P 500 to the downside. So that's kind of my base case here right now of where we currently stand from a macro picture.
Tony, thank you so much for your perspective. I do have two questions for you based on your comments. The first is given, I would say, the market complacency based on what you've shown, despite the signs, meaning kind of those warning signs you've listed, what catalysts do you think could trigger a shift in sentiment or volatility?
Yeah, there's really a couple of things. One, we have that trade deadline that's coming up in August 1st. Even though historically, we've seen these trade deadlines be kicked out further if we don't reach a deal, President Trump has stated that he's not going to extend it beyond August 1st. So that is, in theory, a hard deadline. And at the moment, the EU has not completed a trade deal and has even talked about retaliatory tariffs if a trade deal is not done on August 1st and we raise tariffs on the EU. So that's kind of our worst case scenario. And I think the market right now is underpricing that particular tail risk. The other thing is in the treasury market. Now, even though, a couple of months ago, we started to see some tremors in the treasury market with the Moody's downgrade and a couple of poor auctions in the longer dated bonds, things have recovered a little bit since then. However, we did just see some of the long dated bonds in Japan actually come in lower than expected and yields rise sharply as a result of that. That was largely the same mechanism that we saw here, a couple of months ago here in U.S. Treasury. Where demand was relatively low in longer dated treasury bonds, and the markets reacted fairly negatively to that. And I think that is still a looming risk at the moment, given the trajectory that we are on with regards to the U.S. debt load going forward and the new tax bill that recently just passed.
Thank you for that. And so my second question is regarding the Fed. So if the Fed does hold off on cutting rates, what sectors or asset classes do you think are best positioned to potentially outperform in that environment?
Yeah, so, just to kind of put this into perspective, when we were doing this show here last week, we were expecting only about a 30% chance that the Fed was going to keep rates steady at the September meeting. However, in the last week, or actually in the last 24 hours, with the economic data that's recently come out, with some of the positive tones that I've talked about with regards to earnings season and retail sales, that probability has risen to 46%. That's a near 50-50 split here in terms of whether or not they're going to cut rates in September or not. The market has largely been pricing in a rate cut in September, and it looks like that is with the economic activity that's coming out, that's becoming more of a 50-50 coin flip at the moment. So from my perspective, if the Fed keeps rates steady here in September, that is still at the moment a bit of a status quo with what we're seeing here right now. I'm still looking at financials as a potential outperformer. We've seen financials have a pretty strong quarter with the earnings season that we just started off. The other sectors that I really would be looking at here are technology and consumers. Consumer discretionary specifically, because technology largely will continue to operate, in this type of status quo environment. It will be boosted if we do cut rates, but at the moment, because keeping rates steady is a result of kind of a stronger economic data, I think, consumer discretionary sectors and technology in the short run will likely benefit from that type of environment.
That insight's helpful. Thank you, Tony. Appreciate those answers. So let's shift gears and let's get tactical. What we all came here for. So based on what we talked about, let's talk about the trade idea you have for us today. What opportunity are you seeing in the market today?
Yeah, the stock I want to take a look at here today is Tesla. And, as markets are near these all-time highs and overstretched by most measures, There's really few stocks that look as stretched as Tesla. Despite the strong fundamentals that we see as a car company or relative to the industry, the stock's valuation and just some of the recent numbers that we've seen with regards to deliveries, the executive turnover that we've seen here in the last year, really present some significant downside risks as we head into the earnings next week for Tesla. If you look at a chart here, the stock has recently been rejected at two major resistance levels, first at 360, then at 330. And it's really has underperformed the S&P 500 by a pretty significant margin here over the last few months. And when you have that kind of price action going into earnings, that's usually a sign of potential distribution from institutions ahead of that earnings report. And I think that is a potential bearish signal going into that earnings report. And my downside target here is actually fairly aggressive. It's actually 180 here to the downside. And that fairly aggressive downside target is rooted in the valuation of the company. It's trading at 166 times forward earnings, which is 15 times higher than the industry average. Now, yes, Tesla outperforms the industry by pretty much all measures. If you look at EPS growth, we're looking at about 17, 18% versus the industry is around 8. You look at revenue growth, we're looking at about 13% revenue growth versus the industry is looking at around 3%. So head and shoulders above top and bottom line growth relative to its peers, and even net margins approaching 6.5%. Versus the industry is close to around 2.5%. So overall, Tesla is, like I said, head and shoulders and industry leading across growth and profitability. But does that justify a valuation that's 15 times higher? There's almost no other major mega cap tech company or car manufacturer, or whatever you want to call Tesla at this state, that trades at those types of valuations in relation to its industry. Sometimes the leading company in a specific industry might trade at 1.5 times, 2 times the industry median, but trading at 15 times the industry median is really hard to wrap your heads around. Now, a lot of that valuation comes down to Tesla's recent robotaxi announcement and the rollout of that particular that business line. Now, it's very clear that not only is Tesla sort of behind the curve in this particular space, but there's a lot of competition coming along the way in this particular robotaxi space. So I think those valuations are actually very hard to justify in this type of market environment. We just saw Uber announce earlier today their plans to launch robotaxi in 2026, and arguably Uber has a much larger footprint and customer base to launch that specific product into. So for those reasons, I think Tesla's valuation at 166 times forward earnings is a little difficult to get around, especially when they've seen multiple quarters of delivery declines. We've seen rising inventories, we've seen missed revenue targets, and just overall, the EV market is a relatively declining market, especially with Chinese car manufacturers kind of flooding the market with cheap EVs. It's been really difficult for Tesla to continue to compete. That's why they've had so many price cuts here in the last few years, and that's substantially hurt their margins. So, those are some of the reasons that I think this valuation here for Tesla is going to be increasingly hard to justify, and we're likely going to potentially see some downside going into earnings next week. And I think the best way to play that is to use options, because this way you can take a bearish position with limited risk. Because we've all seen Tesla and Elon Musk, say things that kind of dazzle investors and kind of pop on earnings, even though the underlying fundamentals or the numbers that they report were fairly poor. So I always want to make sure that I remain protected here. So I'm going out to the August expiration. I'm looking at buying the 315-280 put spread. Earlier today, you can pay about $11.40 for that debit spread. And in this particular case, what you have is a risk of around $1,140 in $1,140 per contract for this particular debit spread, with a maximum gain of 2360 for this particular debit spread. And this gives you about a little over a 2-to-1 risk to reward ratio into that earnings report, so that if Tesla's below that 280 downside, 280 lower strike here by that August expiration, you're looking at a risk to reward of about 2-to-1. And if Tesla's stays above 315 at that August expiration, I'm risking $1,140 in this particular case. So, you know, this is the type of trade structure that I like going into earnings season, with the 2-to-1 risk reward ratio, so that if Tesla misses on earnings and sees a significant decline, I have a nice potential return to offset the risk that I'm taking. But if things don't work out and the stock just stays where it is or potentially even pops higher, my risk here of $1,140 in this particular case represents roughly, you know, a little over 3% of the stock's value. So I'm risking a small percentage of the stock's value in this particular case while getting about a 2-to-1 risk reward ratio.
Thank you so much for laying that out in great detail. So I'm always curious in the practicality of trade management, and you've laid out your thesis quite clearly. Could you share with us some of the ways you would consider managing this trade between now and August 15th?
Yeah, so because this is an earnings play and earnings is coming up in about a week's time, you know, this is something that we'll likely be trying to manage right after that earnings announcement, depending on how the stock goes. Now, generally speaking, when we're buying an option in this particular case, in a debit spread structure, the rule of thumb that we generally have is that you want to look at cutting losses if you've lost more than 50% of the premium that you've paid for that option. So if you're paying $11.40 for this debit spread, half of that is around $5.70. So if the spread that you bought for $11.40 trades at $5.70 or lower, and generally speaking, that means that the stock has not moved in the direction you expected to, certainly not in the time frame that you're expecting it to make that move, it's time to cut your losses and move on. And I think it's really important for investors to have a clear-cut, easily defined level at which they would cut losses and move on from the trade, because that is really what defines successful traders from everyone else, is their ability to cut their losses when they should and stick to their rules. And when you have simple, clear-cut rules, they become easier to follow. Now, if the trade goes in your favor, then we have a lot of options as to what we do, whether we just simply close it out for a profit or if we roll it at that time. And that depends a little bit, number one, on what type of numbers come out with that earnings report next week, and also, more importantly, how the market reacts to those specific numbers. So we will be reviewing this particular trade after the earnings report to see which one of those two scenarios play out and how we potentially adjust this position.
Thank you so much for that information. So you've mentioned earnings season a few times, and it's part of the play here on this trade. So as we are indeed approaching, what else has your attention right now?
As you say, next week is really one of the big weeks here for earnings season. We have tech reports starting off next week with Alphabet and Tesla. So one particular name that has my eye is Alphabet. Alphabet trades at a really compelling valuation relative to its peers, especially if you look at their exposure to the AI theme. They're definitely one of the least expensive ways to get exposure from a valuation perspective, trading around 19 times forward earnings with net margins north of 30%. Those are incredibly compelling and strong valuations to consider in this type of market environment. And on top of that, what we have seen is Alphabet outperformed the S&P 500 over the last few weeks. And those are the types of signals that I like to look for going into an earnings season. So I'm going to take a bullish stance with Alphabet going into earnings next week.
All right. Thank you for that awareness. And of course, some news for us all to keep our own eyes on. So shifting gears a little bit, we do save time in each of our conversations to look back at past trade ideas and really see how they played out. I find these moments where we kind of peek back in time They can provide really valuable lessons for all of us. So today, Tony, I do understand you are looking back at a previous trade. Could you update us on what's happened since what your initial trade was and what happened since?
Yeah, so a couple of this was right before the break. We took a bearish stance here on Walmart. And at the time, you know, my thesis was the fact that Walmart was trading at a valuation that's incredibly rich, 38 times forward earnings. It's still trading at 38 times forward earnings. And, you know, Walmart at the time was trading around $94.69. And we sold the July 25th, 95 by 100 call spread. Now, what's really interesting about these types of trades is that when you're selling a call spread, even if the stock goes against you, you can still turn a profit. And that's what I love about these types of trades, because Walmart actually ticked a little bit higher, even though my expectation was we were expecting Walmart to potentially tick lower from here. So Walmart actually rose from that 94.69 to 95.07. But because we were short an option and time decays working in our favor, we actually turned a profit on this particular trade. We originally sold this credit spread for $2. We're now collecting, it's now trading at about $1.17. It's not a big gain, but it's a gain that's big enough, in my opinion, to start taking profits on this, considering we're less than 2 weeks from expiration. Now, my thesis still remains intact, meaning the valuation is still a concern. The timing on it, I think, perhaps was a little bit off, but that's really what's good about these types of short options trades, is that timing is on our side. So what I'm going to do here is, instead of just simply closing it out for a small profit, I'm going to close it out, and then what I'll do is I'll roll it to a new credit spread. So basically rolling out further in time, basically getting more time premium for this particular trade to try to work out. So I'm going out to the August 29th, and I'm looking at selling the 96.102 call spread. And earlier today, you can collect roughly just under $2 again for this particular trade. Now, this is an expansion in the width of the strikes, because the original trade was a 95.100, which is a $5 wide credit spread. Now, this is a 96.102 call spread, which is a $6 wide credit spread. So that does come with a little bit of additional risk. We're risking about $403 versus $197 in potential rewards for this second trade. But because we've already turned a profit from that first trade, our new risk reward ratio is actually far more balanced. We can potentially make 280 while risking 320. So we have a credit spread that has a near 1-to-1 risk reward ratio, since we were able to roll the profits of the first trade into the second trade here. And this is a good example of using credit spreads to basically take a directional view. But, you know, if you're not wrong on the if you're not flat out wrong on the directional view, you can continue to roll and essentially buy yourself more time, where time premium is actually working in your favor, in this, such as this example here with Walmart.
Tony, thank you for this example. And this is a really good example of when we talk about trade management. And you'd started talking a little bit about those adjustments you made in your initial thesis. Can you share a little bit more about maybe were there any others, or just share in a little bit more depth about those adjustments?
Yeah, so you know, when you're thinking about these types of credit spreads, like I said, the time premium is working in your favor, right? And when you make these adjustments, the most important thing I think you have to remember and to think through is whether or not the original thesis that you had on the trade still applies. You know, a lot of times when the trade is starting to go against you, perhaps new information has come out. In this particular case, you know, even economic numbers have started to turn a little bit higher here. You know, those are some of the things that may sway your decision as to whether or not you want to roll these positions, because rolling the positions when the trade has gone in your favor is really more of an art than a science. There's no hard and fast rules as to what you do, versus when trades go in against you and they've kind of gone in the opposite direction, the rules tend to be very black and white, hard and fast, so that you kind of stick to them. But when things go in your favor, you have a lot of different ways that you can do this. So from my perspective, you know, retail sales is probably the biggest concern for me in terms of rolling this, because you know, when we were looking at this nearly a month ago, the economic data from a retail sales perspective, consumer sentiment perspective, was looking far more ominous with regards to kind of what the second half of 2025 look like. Right now, it looks like potentially we could be turning a bit of a corner here. But again, my thesis here for Walmart is rooted in its valuation. Trading at 38 times forward earnings when it actually underperforms many of its peers that actually trades at significantly lower valuations. Last week, we laid out a bullish thesis on Target. And in many ways, Target actually outperforms Walmart from a profitability perspective, from a growth perspective in terms of EPS, yet Target trades at only 14 times forward earnings. So in this particular case, I still am going to maintain a bearish view on Walmart and a bullish view on Target in this type of market environment.
Thank you so much for that information and response. So Tony, I'm going to stop again and say thank you. This does bring our show today to a close. And I want to say, first of all, thank you to all of our viewers for tuning in today. Tony, thank you, thank you, thank you for bringing us your thoughts and your trade ideas today.
Thank you so much, Roberta. Thank you so much, everyone.
If you're interested in further details specific to Tony's trade ideas that he shared with us today, please join us in our midday market briefing, which will be held tomorrow. And you can do that by visiting fidelity.com/InTheMoneyFollowUp. Also, if you're looking for further insights or if you missed the live show, be sure to sign up for the Active Investor Weekly newsletter to receive highlights of the trades discussed today. And you can do that by visiting fidelity.com/Active Investor Weekly. Next week, we'll see you back for another episode of In the Money. Take care.
Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Options trading entails significant risk and is not appropriate for all investors. Certain complex option strategies carry additional risk. Before trading options, contact Fidelity Investments by calling 800-544-5115 to receive a copy of Characteristics and Risks of Standardized Options. Supporting documentation for any claims, if applicable, will be furnished upon request. There are additional costs associated with option strategies that call for multiple purchases and sales of options, such as spreads, straddles, and collars, as compared with a single option trade. Technical analysis focuses on market action, specifically volume and price. Technical analysis is only one approach to analyzing stocks. When considering which stocks to buy or sell, you should use the approach that you're most comfortable with. As with all of your investments, you must make your own determination as to whether an investment in any particular security or securities is right for you based on your investment objectives, risk tolerance, and financial situation. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Greeks are mathematical calculations used to determine the effect of various factors on options. Indexes are unmanaged. It is not possible to invest directly in an index. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at that time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of Options Play, and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. News, commentary, market data, and research reports are from third-party sources unaffiliated with Fidelity, unless otherwise noted, and are provided for informational purposes only. Fidelity does not endorse or adopt third-party content. Fidelity makes no guarantee that the information supplied is accurate, complete, or timely, and does not provide any warranties regarding results obtained from their use. Any screenshots, charts, or company trading symbols mentioned are provided for illustrative purposes only and should not be considered as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for the security. Options Play and Fidelity Investments are independent entities and are not legally affiliated. The third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC. Copyright 2024 FMR LLC. All rights reserved. 1109225.1.0. Information provided in the podcast is general in nature, is provided for informational purposes only, and should not be construed as investment or tax advice. Fidelity Investments disclaims any liability for any direct or incidental loss incurred by applying any of the information in this podcast. This podcast is intended for U.S. persons only and is not a solicitation for any Fidelity product or service. This podcast is provided for your personal non-commercial use and is the copyrighted work of FMR LLC. You may not reproduce this podcast in whole or in part in any form without the permission of FMR LLC.